Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. The North Carolina General Assembly is expected to return to Raleigh in October for yet another special session, this one focused on disaster relief in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. While communities are still tallying the damage, Governor Roy Cooper has acknowledged that addressing the state's chronic shortage of affordable housing needs to be a top priority. This week, I sat down with Bill Rowe, General Counsel and Deputy Director of Advocacy at the North Carolina Justice Center, to discuss the housing crisis as well as some of the environmental challenges facing our state as we begin the recovery from Florence's floodwaters. Well, Bill Rowe, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being back with us.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, the subject of our discussion today is the impact of Hurricane Florence on what's already really been an inadequate and decimated infrastructure in many respects for a lot of parts of North Carolina, in particular southeastern North Carolina, where we have big affordable housing problems even before Florence hit. Can you sort of summarize some of the what's going on now?
I mean, eastern North Carolina has always had trouble with having adequate housing and affordable housing for folks. You know, we go back to when Floyd and Fran hit, there was a huge crisis then at that time, and we were really learning about the need for rental housing. Folks forget about renters, and a lot of times the programs that are available don't necessarily address the long-term needs of that. But in 2018, you have places like Wilmington, that's a really hot housing market, that the costs are driving people out, that are the people who work, the hospitality, the medical folks, where now the studies show that 50% of the renters in New Hanover County are cost burden, meaning they pay more than 30% of their income for rent.
This was before the storm hit,
obviously.
This was
before the storm, so there was a lack of affordable housing there. Now, we don't know what happened yet.
Right.
We know there's a lot of housing got ruined or destroyed or damaged, but none of the assessment's been done, as we've done in past storms, where you can really identify how many people and who they are and how many are owner-occupied and how many are renters. But you know, other counties like Cumberland County, 47% of the renters live in unaffordable housing. And in Robeson County, it's 42% of the renters. And with Robeson and Cumberland, they also got hit by Matthew 2 years ago, and now they've been hit again. And we have reports that many of the people who were trying to get back on their feet and trying to get their housing repaired, they may have been damaged again. So this will be I think for all reports we've seen, much worse than the Matthew coming back from, and we still don't know all the answers. But housing is going to be a huge piece of the puzzle. It always is. And the other piece is the businesses. A lot of it is tourism on the coast, and that is probably done for the season right now, and you can't get there. And if you get there, you may not want to be there. And then there's lots of businesses that have been impacted too. So it's a huge undertaking to try to get that region of the state back to where people are at least being able to get to work and have a place to live.
One of the issues after Matthew, there's been a lot of complaints that the relief didn't, even Matthew 2 years ago, that the relief hasn't gotten to people who deserve it or who need it. One of the issues I think you've pointed out at times is that there needs to be an infrastructure there to deliver the services to people. Many of the programs that used to exist in southeastern North Carolina have been defunded by the General Assembly in recent years, the economic development groups. And so it's all well and good to talk about let's get relief to people, but if we don't even have the systems in place to deliver it, it's impossible. It's asking the impossible.
Right. I think in Floyd, one of the things that was in place was that you had community development corporations that were in virtually all of the counties affected. They were local nonprofits and they were community-based. They were good eyes and ears of what was happening, and so they were great at being able to get information to people. But they're also great at delivering services and trying to connect people to what they needed. Those have been defunded in the last 4 or 5 years, and so they're not there as they used to be. Now, what we've, I think, also learned with Matthew is that you do need people in the community. I think the governor has started to have some hurricane resource centers. There were some in Matthew that were locally based. We probably need them in each of the counties. And you're right about it being close to the community, because otherwise the only connection is with the local government. And sometimes the local government isn't as connected or as answerable to many of the communities, especially the poorest folks, people of color, folks in much more cut off areas. You need people who can reach those folks and get information to them and help them navigate the system. I mean, the other part is somewhere for people to go to just find out what's going on, because it's very complicated. It shouldn't be complicated, but you've got all the alphabet soup places. You're going to have FEMA. You're going to have CDBG disaster relief. You're going to have the SBA, which is Small Business Administration. Then you have the state programs layered over that. And you have lots of volunteers. But it has to be organized pretty well. And I think this administration is doing a good job at that. But at the same time, you need an infrastructure on the ground to communicate with the people who are there so they can access the services. Or if they don't feel like they're getting the help they need, they have somewhere to go to tell their story to so they can get what they need.
Well, if you think about it, you're a low-income person. You may not even have internet service to begin with. You've lost your home, or you're out of the house that you rented. You've lost your possessions. You may or may not have a car. You know, you can't just get on the web and file a claim. I mean, it's obvious you need some actual human contact. So the idea of building some sort of infrastructure to help people seems to make obvious sense. I know you've talked about legal services as being an area where we could desperately need some additional resources to help people. There's going to be a lot of people getting scammers who are going to show up and try to rip people off with home improvement. You know, well, oh, yeah, I'll fix your house up, and why don't you write me a check for several $1,000s ahead of time, that kind of stuff. We need law enforcement. We need folks from the Attorney General's office, consumer protection efforts.
Yeah, the legal services piece, we've heard more and more from folks in the communities that they really need lawyers or paralegals or other folks trained to be on the ground to help people sort through some of this. Now, not everybody has to be a lawyer to give the advice about how to navigate the systems, but there are going to be issues around landlord-tenant relationships and where you're a tenant and your place is not fit to live in, what are your rights, and the landlord may want the rent, but the landlord's not due the rent if the place can't be lived in. There could be foreclosure issues facing people, and it's navigating that system and getting to the resources. There are resources that can help people, good programs at the Housing Finance Agency to try to step in and provide mortgage payments. And then the consumer scams are just, it's rife for people to come, mostly from out of state quite often, where they see a quick buck to be made. And then there's the denial of benefits. I mean, it's just making sure if you are denied that it's been done properly. Oftentimes it's a question of whether you have all the paperwork together. And for folks in these situations, especially those who have really been hard hit, just got out of their houses with the clothes on their back, it's hard to recreate those documents. And they may need somebody's help to be able to do that. One scam we are concerned about, and I think in Matthew there was good oversight, and we hope there'll be oversight this time, is that there'll be a lot of contractors that will be paid with state and federal dollars to help repair and rebuild. And we want to make sure those folks aren't misclassifying their workers as independent contractors. There's been a lot of stories about that cheating going on around the state, where you can underbid legitimate businesses by calling somebody, they're not an employee of mine, they're an independent contractor, even though I'm telling them when they got to come to work and what they've got to do and how they ought to do it. They're an employee, but if you classify them as an independent contractor, you don't pay for unemployment insurance, you don't pay for workers' comp, you don't do any withholding for those folks for state and federal taxes, and then if anybody gets hurt, they're left holding the bag. And also the workers just don't get what they're due, basically. So that can be done with good contracts and good oversight and random audits to make sure that those businesses that are getting state and federal monies are not cheating at the same time.
Who should be overseeing that?
Well, I probably emergency management. Uh-huh. They're the ones who are overseeing this disaster relief. And so I think within their orbit, they need to be making sure someone is tasked with that job and creating the contracts.
Another obvious crisis issue for a lot of southeastern North Carolina is the pollution. We know that there were dozens of hog waste lagoons and toxic waste sites and coal ash dumps in the way of the storm that have overflowed and overtopped their borders, gone out into the water system. We know that wells are being polluted, that drinking water is being polluted. This is another area where there's just an obvious need for a lot of state resources to come in and try and address this issue. Am I right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think again, that will be resources that have to hit the ground to be able to do it. Some of it is very local, just testing wells. And right now, people are being asked to get their own kits and test their wells before they use their water. But that can be somewhat frightening of whether anybody has the ability to go get those and where they are. And in rural North Carolina, a lot of people rely on well water. So we really need a concerted effort to see what's happened to those wells. And then just all the rivers and the flooding, they're just full of all manner of problems that can make people sick. And so I think there's a huge piece of this puzzle around health and being able to make sure people have access to getting diagnosed or being checked or being seen and also being safe. And then the other part that we saw from Matthew is it's a tremendous amount of stress on folks, from children to the caretakers and adults in the family, that mental health has to be available for folks for either counseling or just treatment. Because, you know, we had people living in motels, and some people are still homeless 2 years later after Matthew, and this may still be the same because it takes so long to rebuild. So the faster we can get things done and get people in the housing, but in the intervening time, those folks are going to need some care and some counseling to be able to, not everybody, but a lot of folks will need some of that help.
The legislature has, the state has, a couple of $1 billion, right, in a rainy day fund. I mean, if this ain't a rainy day, I don't know what it is. There's talk of coming in and maybe spending some of that. Is there any reason not to spend it all?
No, I think you have to spend, you got to determine what the needs are and where the gaps are. And so we're in a place where we don't really know that all now. Hopefully the federal government's going to step up with a robust relief package and recovery package, but there will be gaps in that. We have learned that over the years that there will be holes, particularly around renters and getting the rental housing built back, that we're going to need that. But there's issues now even with small businesses that it may take them a while to get their small business loan that they may qualify for. And so there are some programs I think the Rural Center has, and I think there are some other programs where there's some gap funding to help people that can be repaid. But you got to figure out what those gaps are. Housing is going to be a big one of those. And I think for helping businesses not go out of business and not be completely ruined in the meantime is going to take some resources until the federal dollars start flowing.
Now, North Carolina actually has an affordable housing trust fund. It has some existing programs that have been enormously successful. They win awards, but the amount of funding that we put into them is a relative pittance. It's just a few million dollars, which for a state of 10 million people is...
It's a little over $7 million for our housing trust fund, which is a pittance when you could look at, I think Florida may have $100 million for their housing trust fund, and Washington State may be upwards of that number as well, and other states are approaching it. And what's wonderful about our housing trust fund is it's very flexible, and it comes with not a lot of strings attached, and it can be used to really address needs, but it also is used to address the needs of the lowest income families that are out there. So it's a proven great track record. The states that have really beefed up their trust funds have understood that it delivers on a number of levels. One is you're going to help people stabilize and be in decent housing, and as they save money, they're going to spend that in the economy. It's going to be good. But then you also have people building the housing, and you've got people financing the housing and people selling the materials to build the housing. And so all of that is a great job generator, and it increases the tax base for folks as well. And you make the communities better. So it's a tremendous win-win for everybody involved, from the communities to the financing institutions, to the builders, to the families who receive the assistance. So this is a great opportunity for the trust fund to be put to work in this relief, but it'd be nice also to build it up, because the problems we have down east that we're dealing with, these 18 counties right now, we got another 82 counties that are struggling with affordable housing issues as well and could need some help.
We had a speaker come speak at a Policy Watch luncheon after Hurricane Matthew, who talked about the fact that in Houston, what was the one we had? I can't even remember the names of all the one. The one we had that inundated Houston last year.
Right.
That what they find is that in wealthier communities, we actually often see that those communities rebound pretty quickly and may in some ways actually be better off. There's so much money in Houston, so much oil money, so much wealth, that Houston had a very quick turnaround. Infrastructure was repaired quickly. But in struggling parts of the country, like maybe Louisiana, parts of Louisiana after Katrina, Mississippi, and in here in southeastern North Carolina, it's really much more difficult because there just isn't the, there aren't the resources locally to rebuild. So unless they get help from the federal government or from the state government, it's going to take a long, long time. And it just sort of bespeaks the fact that the infrastructure was terrible in many parts of southeastern North Carolina to begin with. And it really, North Carolina needs to think seriously about this part of the state. If we don't want it to just be a chronic poor sister to the state, we're going to need to think about a real Marshall Plan to rebuild this part of our state.
Right. I mean, there's sort of the we're in the rescue part of the disaster now, but then there's a recovery piece, and you hope that you leave the area after we get done doing the recovery better off than it was. And like you said, leave an infrastructure behind that's ready to deal with this when it happens again, because it will happen again. And to make decisions that will lessen the effect on folks when it does happen again. So there's a lot of thinking ahead. I think, Matthew, a lot of lessons learned, and folks have been doing that there, working with experts. I think UNC Chapel Hill and NC State and other universities were very involved in being proactive about the planning and the thinking and what they say, making these communities more resilient. So it is leaving behind the infrastructure, but also a plan for how we're going to be safer the next time this happens, and how you can be more responsive when these sorts of things occur.
One other issue I think related to that is the whole issue of climate change and sea level rise. The legislature's kind of taken this position in the past that we're not going to think too far down the road on that. They still are questioning whether climate change is real. It seems increasingly apparent that storms like this are going to become more and more frequent. Do you have any sense that maybe this is finally starting to penetrate the consciousness of state lawmakers, that they're going to have to think long term about this stuff? It's got to be more than just about disaster relief and neighbors helping neighbors. It's got to be thinking about where people live and how they live. And do you have any hope on that front?
I think so. I mean, I'm not a scientist. I'm a lawyer. So, and my brief, 30 years being in North Carolina, the hurricanes are different. But if you talk to people who have been here, they know they're different. And this one fits that mold of what we're seeing, where it comes along and it stays. And it stays and it rains for a long time. And some people attribute that to climate change or things in the atmosphere and why the storm stalls out and why there's so much moisture. But we got to know that's happening. That's happening. And if you don't believe it's because of climate change, that's one thing. But it's still happening. And these coastal communities are facing tremendous problems with flooding. You have so many rivers coming this way that with that amount of rain, it's impossible for there not to be tremendous devastation. So there's got to be thoughts about when the next one comes, what do we do? It still will be bad, but how can we reduce the amount of risk to our citizens?
Keep our fingers crossed that our lawmakers continue to move forward in that direction, get a little new momentum to make things better. Thank you for all you do to help lead that charge at the General Assembly. Maybe we'll check back in after the special session in a few months and see how things are looking.
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
Coming up next, a look at some of the top issues confronting North Carolina with State Senate Minority Leader Dan Blue.